Welcome, members and guests, to the September 11th program of the City Club of Eugene, Civic Education in Oregon, Local Superintendents, Lane County Projects. Thank you for joining us. I'm James Baldock, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Luvis and Cobb, attorneys at law, where our client's best interests is our first concern, SaniPak, caring for our community, and PakInfo, Internet Solutions. We are grateful to the Center for Nonprofit Law for its in-kind contribution. Special thanks to KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space, and to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights, and for archiving the podcasts on their site. A quick reminder that we host nearly 50 original nonpartisan issue programs every year, and today is our first program in our 2015-2016 program a year. If you believe with us that civic education is the lifeblood of democracy, please join us. We welcome donors, sponsors, members, volunteers, and students, anyone who has a stake in community life. Our newest sponsor, The Collegiate. Oh, please welcome our newest sponsor, The Collegiate, with Martin Selig and Natasha Marshall, and new members Kevin and Evelyn Shanley. Today's program, Civic Education in Oregon, Local Superintendents, Lane County Projects, is coordinated by Marlene Nessery and Mary Layton. Here's Marlene to tell us more.
Thank you, James. I'll introduce today's speakers and program on civic education in just a moment. But first, I'd like to announce the launch of City Club's new initiative on civic education. We're focusing on youth engagement, underserved communities, showcase events, and the practical skills and competencies needed for active citizenship in a democracy. You'll find a project overview on the tables and on our website. Stay tuned for more information in coming weeks. Special thanks to the following early adopters for their generous financial support of this new City Club project: Karen Hyatt, Joel Corin, the Layton family, Ruth Miller, Marlene Nessery, and Marty Wilde. For today's program, we'll be focused on civic education in Lane County school districts, specifically what four superintendents have planned for K-12 social studies, civics, government, and community projects. I'll bet we discover some exciting collaboration opportunities. Our speakers are Dr. Gustavo Balderas, new superintendent for the Eugene 4J District, who took office this July; Colt Gill, superintendent of the Bethel School District here in Eugene; Jody O'Mara, who is superintendent of the Mapleton School District; and Susan Reike-Smith, who was appointed Springfield School's interim superintendent this past June. Bravo, superintendents, and thank you for taking the time to be with the City Club of Eugene in this, the very crowded first week of school. So please join me in welcoming them.
Well, thank you for being here. I know that we're competing with the governor, which is hard to compete with, but thank you for being here. My name is Gustavo Balderas, superintendent of Eugene 4J. Pleasure to be here with my esteemed colleagues. A little bit about 4J. We're about a little over 16,000 kids. We're the seventh largest school district in Oregon. We have roughly 1,700 staff members. That's classified teaching staff as well as administrative staff. Also, a little bit about me, native Oregonian, recently transplanted from Southern California, but spent 20 years in a Hillsborough school district, and native Oregonian from a small town of Nissa, Oregon. So, happy to be here. A little bit about civic education in 4J. Currently offer units and whole courses in government. I know Colt's going to be speaking about the curriculum piece a little bit, but we also offer a lot of civic-minded clubs. I think that's really, truly important across our school system. Civic responsibility is something to our core, something that we truly believe in and try and embed as much as we can across our system, from civic responsibility to giving back to our community. From personally, I used to be a board member at Solve up in Oregon, so giving back in terms of cleaning up and just, again, taking care of our communities. But we do have the Classroom Citizen Project at Roosevelt Middle School, which is associated with the Classroom Law Project, and I saw some literature here that mentions the Classroom Law Project as well out of Portland, which is fantastic, and that has to do with a lot of mock trial competitions for our students, We the People competitions, and We the People are a citizen and constitution program for our upper elementary, middle, and high school students, as well as attending the Oregon Civics Conference coming up in December. So it's something that we offer our students. We do have a variety of courses that do vary in 4J. We offer a law studies course, social justice studies course at Churchill High School, as well as the street law course. So something that really interesting, really divergent in 4J. But again, we can always try and do more, and we do try and engage with our communities, especially at the younger grades, to get them started early in terms of their civic responsibility, working with local governments. So we're always looking for partners. So I know there's a lot of partners out here. We are always looking for partners to try and engage our young students in terms of giving back to our community, but learning how government works. So.
Hi there, I'm Colt Gill with Bethel School District. That's the Eugene's lucky enough to have two school districts. So Bethel's the other one in town. It's about 6,000 students. Oregon has 197 school districts, and Bethel's the 24th largest. So we're kind of in the upper end of the middle of the pack. Oregon has a lot of very small school districts that serve the rural parts of the state. We have a lot of things to share, so we tried to split things up a little bit. I'm going to touch on curriculum. We've been implementing some new curriculum this year in Bethel School District. We were lucky enough to have our community step up and say it's time to replace some dated materials. And when we began to look for social studies materials, we found that even the new materials really lag behind in what we'd like to present to our students. So there's a history of teaching this content of social studies and civics through the lens of the dominant culture in our society. And it really requires little cognitive effort on the part of our students, is sometimes even seen as boring by our students. And worst of all, it marginalizes the experiences of many in our community. So we really worked hard to take a look at what was available, pick the very best of what's out there, and then bring our staff together to try to overcome some of those shortfalls of the curriculum that's currently available. So making that shift isn't easy. We do believe that the standards that are out there right now have really been improving. So the standards in the state of Oregon, they are more inclusive and they're more comprehensive. The curriculum and even the rubrics for selecting that curriculum are still quite a bit behind when you're trying to focus on democratic equity and multicultural citizenship. Those pieces are still far behind in the world of publishing. So once we selected our curriculum and brought our staff together, we tried to focus on four areas to really boost that up. So the first of those is democratic equity and multicultural citizenship. So we refer to equity in instructional design, and I did put some of those at the table. They look like this. So you can pass those around if you want. But this is really what we use to try to engage all of our students and help them understand the roles of everyone in our community when we talk about civics education and when we talk about history. So it covers multiple perspectives, citizenship skills, democratic equity, social action, and reflective inquiry. The second area that we focus on is content area literacy. And this is a new concept when Oregon adopted Common Core state standards in English language arts. It actually crosses over into the other content areas. So rather than just focusing on developing our skills reading stories and reading fiction, we really focus a lot on reading nonfiction and understanding informational text and original source documents. And so that's one of the other areas in social studies that we have a large focus. The third area is a lot what Gus talked about. So really trying to provide those real-world experiences for our kids so they can apply this knowledge that they're acquiring in the community. So we do that through debate clubs and debate classes, through Socratic method instruction, a lot of discussions in the classroom, providing access to original source documents. Project-based learning at Willamette High School, we have a project where students take an idea for a public policy issue from concept on through all the steps that it would take to make that become a law or a new public policy, and we have members of our community come in and judge students on their progress as they present those. Also have a lot of speakers that come into the classrooms, clubs, and affinity groups in our middle schools and high schools especially, where students can use these skills in real life. And then the last piece is really a change in the way that we assess our students. So we really want them to be able to demonstrate their knowledge and skills in critical thinking. So you don't see Scantron sheets where they're filling in bubbles of A, B, or C on, you know, what year was America discovered by Columbus. What you'll see is real authentic assessment where they're taking the knowledge that they learned and applying it to the cultures of the time and the impacts on those different cultures when different things in history happened. So it's just a quick touch. We're going to keep moving down the line and then we'll be able to take questions.
So I'm Jody O'Mara and I'm the superintendent of Mapleton School District. If you've ever driven to Florence, you've driven through Mapleton. And I'd like to give you a little different perspective on the difficulty of providing opportunities for students to participate in local government and civics activities. In almost 40% of our Lane County schools, we have 15 school districts. Six of them have no local or city government to support their communities. That's Mapleton, Blatchley, Carapelgate, Lorain, Marcola, McKenzie, and Pleasant Hill. Mapleton School District, just to give you a picture, serves 150 students K through 12. We serve the communities of Deadwood, Swiss Home, Tide, and Indiola. We do provide a comprehensive high school program with a staff of 8 teachers. Our elementary school consists of 5 teachers teaching a full-day kindergarten, a first, second blended classroom, a third, fourth blended classroom, and a fifth, sixth blended classroom, along with Title I, K-6, and then our SPED is K-12. We do boast small class sizes, and with that small class size, it allows us to develop really tight relationships with our students and our families that creates a family feel within our community. We've been an AVID elementary school for 2 years, and thanks to a Nike Innovation Fund grant, we are now AVID district-wide. If you don't know what AVID is, it promotes college and career readiness skills, starting in kindergarten, going through 12th grade. We've maintained our enrollment for the last 5 years, and 100% of our teachers are highly qualified. We still provide football, volleyball, basketball, and track for all of our middle school and high school students with a no pay-to-play fee for our families. Yes, we're excited about that too. Our elementary school is currently in its 4th year as a priority school. We've improved achievement every year, and we plan to be out of priority school status this year. We currently serve 100% of our students free breakfast and lunch due to a CEP program, and that was based on our previous free and reduced lunch of 87%. I'm telling you the story of Mapleton so you can have a better picture of what education in a rural community looks like. Being an educator in a rural community is the best job, but also one of the toughest jobs I've had. Everyone wears multiple hats. For example, I'm not just the superintendent. I'm the elementary principal, curriculum director, federal programs director, elementary counselor, nurse. I've actually been known to coach a varsity basketball game, referee a middle school volleyball game, and sometimes I'm a custodian. Just don't ask me to drive a bus. I have found that educating students in a rural community presents a difficult challenge in regards to providing them the ability to observe and participate and understand the importance of local government and their civic responsibilities. In Mapleton, our middle school students travel to the state capitol. They visit with legislators and take a tour. We do have a local student government that provides, with a goal of providing opportunities for students to participate and be involved in the local community. And our high school students, they have a full year of government, economics, world history, U.S. history, and elective opportunities. However, you can imagine providing an opportunity for students in rural communities like Mapleton and the others I listed to observe and participate in local government, it's a struggle. The closest opportunity for Mapleton students are in Florence. From our school, that's a 20-minute drive. From homes in Deadwood, it's about 45 minutes to an hour. And that means they have to drive there, participate in Port Commission meeting, a City Planning Commission meeting, yet those don't pertain to their community. It's outside of their community. So while I don't have an answer necessarily for the issue facing local schools and rural schools, I'm hopeful that by getting the word out about the lack of local opportunities for students in the rural communities to participate in civics education and be involved in their local government, that maybe greater minds can prevail and help educate all of our students, including those that are in our rural communities in Oregon and in Lane County. Thank you.
And I am Sue Rieke-Smith, the superintendent for Springfield Public Schools. We are a district of about 10,900 students. We have a free and reduced lunch rate of 65%. And we are a wonderful small community that cares deeply about its children, but we continue to dig out of the Great Oregon Recession. That said, in Springfield, we believe in educating the whole child. I have learned in the last year that Springfield is a legacy district, that the students that we instruct today will come back to us and invest in our community. And one of the greatest examples of that, among many great examples, is our current mayor, Christine Lundberg, who herself is a product of Springfield Public Schools. In Springfield, because we believe in educating the whole child, we take an integrated approach to subjects across the spectrum. So much as you heard Colt speak to, it's not just teaching about the content and skills relative to math or language arts or science or social studies, but it's then taking those skills and giving children an opportunity to integrate them and do critical thinking through projects that then we can also assess them at the same time. How well did they integrate the content, how well do they understand the standards based on the product that they produce at the end of the project. And we also are very much involved in collaborating with our local partners, higher ed, our civic leaders, our business community. Many of you who are in this room have been great partners with us in Springfield. In our elementary schools, one great example of that partnership is the Guy Lee School theme, The Kid President. And if you haven't had a chance to get acquainted with YouTube, Google Kid President, and you will see a series of videos that have gone viral across the nation of a young elementary, probably now heading into middle school student, who speaks to the concepts of good citizenship, encouraging positive behaviors and perspective of service beyond self. In our secondary schools, we have many programs. The first I'd like to speak to is the National Mock Elections that are funded and provided by the League of Women Voters. We have student leadership groups who research and organize fundraisers or donation drives for local and worldwide events in the past 2 years for disaster relief. Parallel to that, we have a program entitled Gift of Giving for our 7th grade language arts students. They work with local nonprofit organizations, learning about fundraising and volunteer recruitment campaigns. At our 8th grade, we have a program such as the Project Citizen, where we incorporate discussions about the Constitution. They focus on ways to participate in their communities and understand the responsibilities of citizenship, which leads to opportunities to volunteer in our community. Recent organizations have included the Willamette Lane Recreation Center and Food for Lane County Youth Farm. At Briggs Middle School, our 8th grade participates in a citizen service project in which each student commits to 3 to 5 volunteer hours with a service organization throughout the community. An essential part of this program is that students are working side by side with an individual who is committed to serving others. It's a great mentorship opportunity. Eighth graders at Agnes Stewart Middle School are part of the College and Career Readiness Program, where they visit local government as part of career options overview, and they learn about elected positions, hired positions, city planning, library services, and the like. In our high schools, we have a peer review grant process that we are exceptionally proud of, in which students submit grant proposals for community service projects funding that are then evaluated and awarded by their peers. So in closing, I want to return to the 2 of the 5 lenses that I shared with my district on Tuesday, that being collaboration and innovation. We firmly believe that our decision and our work in terms of educating our children is richer when we have the diverse voices of our community with us at the table. And we also believe that learning is not the sole province of the classroom four walls, but it occurs out in the community with our community partners. And these are just a few of the programs of which we are very proud of at Springfield Public Schools. And we're looking forward to continued opportunities to take these programs and expand upon them with you, our business and community partners, in the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. Today's topic is civic education in Oregon, local superintendents, Lane County projects. Our speakers are Gustavo Balderas, superintendent of Eugene School District 4J, Colt Gill, superintendent of Bethel School District, Jody O'Mara, superintendent of Mapleton School District, and Susan Reike-Smith, interim superintendent of the Springfield Public Schools. We'll break now for a few minutes and then return with members' questions.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
Welcome back to the September 11th City Club program, Civic Education in Oregon, Local Superintendents, Lane County Projects. Our guest speakers are Gustavo Balderas, Colt Gill, Jody O'Mara, and Susan Reike-Smith. City Club members, please identify yourselves and keep your questions to about 30 seconds each.
My name is John DeLoe, and civics and social studies. I'm one of the oldest people in the room, and I am not familiar with exactly what they constitute. What are you teaching when you say civics and social studies?
Okay. I'll try to start. So in Oregon, there are standards for social sciences or social studies education, and they're really broad, actually. So in each of the sort of subtopics, they go deep and tell what students should know and be able to do. But civics covers government classes, so understanding the three branches of our government and the history behind that. It also covers history, so world history, U.S. history, Oregon history at certain grade levels. Covers financial...
Economics
at high school, but actually financial literacy all the way through kindergarten through 12th grade. What else am I missing, guys?
Looking here at my list.
We're looking up the... Go
ahead. So at the high school level, freshmen typically take a global history course, and in most districts, at junior year, you take U.S. history, and then this is Gustavo Balderas, 4J. So senior year, there's an economics and also a government class that kids are responsible for. But also, there's a lot of electives that are particular sometimes per school. So for example, in 4J, we do have IB Theory of Knowledge. That's a comprehensive class that's under the social studies guys, as well as law studies and social justice studies, which also fall under social studies.
Similar to what you just heard here, we also cover the election process, civic engagement, and civil rights. We have at our Thurston High School AP Government, and there's also a project here. I'm looking at my notes that I was remiss in sharing with you that there's directly then engaging from the course content relative to government and civil rights, working with Representative DeFazio's office in terms of what does that look like at the federal level, and as well as how that is operationalized at the state level.
Joshua Scove, City Club member. Also, I have two daughters in 4J schools. Thank you. Also, just as a side note, I really appreciated hearing about Mapleton. I think it's easy for people to lose track of what happens in rural Oregon if you spend a lot of time in urban Oregon. And Superintendent Balderas, I'll ask a really easy question, simple, uncontroversial, just because you're new.
Softball.
Yes. Okay. So my question's about taxes. That's a joke, right?
Okay,
so, but seriously, it has struck me that this is a civics question for the district itself. Let me frame it this way. Our children grow up in a world in which they start to hear over and over about how dramatically underfunded their schools are. Some of them might even start to wonder. I'm kind of waiting for that question from my older daughter at some point. So I guess it's really three questions together. The first is, how do we talk about the resources that we devote or don't devote to our schools? The second is, and this is the uncontroversial part, which taxes would you like to levy? And then, but seriously, what are the fiscal instruments one might consider? And then the third is, as we, you know, those of us who wish to generate more momentum for more resources for schools, what are the highest priorities? What should we tell people the first dollars would be spent on that would be highest bang for the buck for our children?
So resources, I think the first question is, how do you speak regarding our declining resources availability? This is, again, Gustavo Balderas from 4J. I think I look at more from the asset base in terms of what we have and what we're offering, and not talk so much from the deficit basis in terms of what we don't have. I think that's one of the things that I work with my senior staff in terms of talking points, in terms of more of the positive, because we're doing great things with what we have, and we've done great things with what we have since Measure 5 hit in the late 80s. And I've actually been in education since Measure 5. I mean, I've been in education here in Oregon since 1990. So I've been 26 years in this, and this is what I know. This is all I know. So what we have is great teachers doing great things every day in classrooms, and not so much speaking about the deficit, I guess. It is what it is. And what we can do, I think your number two question regarding the taxes, I think look at other states in terms of how they've helped sponsor an increase, again, to the quality education model we have here in Oregon. I think that's something that we can look at. Look at the QEM, and I think fully funding the QEM will get us right to the middle. Maybe Colt can speak a little bit more to that.
Sure. So I'm Colt Gilligan with Bethel School District. And right now I'm the acting chair of the Quality Education Commission for Oregon. We have other quality education commissioners in the room. Beth Giroux at the table up front here. One of the things that the Quality Education Commission does is study what is needed to reach the state's goals for education. The state's goals right now are 40-40-20. That's the quick term for it, but it's 40% of our students graduating from four-year university, 40% going on to community college and graduating with a two-year degree of some kind, and 20% at least graduating from high school. We're far from that in Oregon. A couple of the reasons are that we have some of the highest class sizes in the country in our state. Because of our funding level, we have one of the shortest school years in the state. In fact, kids in Oregon that go to school from first through 12th grade have a full year and a half less education when they graduate high school than students in our neighboring state to the north, Washington. So those students are coming out with, like I said, a full year and a half more education when they graduate high school. And those are issues that we do need to tackle in our state, and we do need to look at the funding models that other states are providing. The quality education model that Gus referred to, the QEM, does just that. And one of the things that we've talked about in recent years in Oregon is that this quality education model seems like an educational nirvana, like this would be magical for Oregon. What we've come to realize is it's what the average is in our country, so it's what pretty much every other state is providing, and Oregon needs to find a way to step up and meet that level of funding for its students. One of the things that I agree with Gus is that in the school system, we can't dwell on that deficit. We need to look for the assets in our community. And Lane County is a tremendous place to raise children, even with the schools funded at the level they are. And that's only because the community steps up every time. Mm-hmm. So we have tremendous community organizations. Most recent example for me is the United Way of Lane County, who reached out and wrote a federal grant that is bringing in $2 million of federal funds to provide pre-kindergarten programs to every student in Lane County. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. And so it's programs like that where the schools and the community come together that we can make up that difference for our students.
And one of the things Colt talked about is time in the classroom. Many of our school districts, especially our rural school districts, have gone to a four-day school week. And that was done prior to my getting to Mapleton, so this is about the fifth, sixth year they've done it. It was due to budget cuts. It meant the day was longer, but just adding an hour to every day does not replace the day of education and the support that our kids are now missing. It's very hard to go back to a five-day because of budget cuts and because of the budget. But I think the top priority, you asked about what the top priority, in my opinion, from a rural district perspective, it would be increasing the amount of time our students spend, not in one day, but going back to a five-day week, and my teachers will probably disagree, but I will say getting back to a five-day week and then increasing the school year and adding the time that our kids need and deserve to become active members of our society.
This is Sue Ricky Smith, Springfield. To that point, I want to go back to Gus's first remarks relative coming from an asset base. And we are very grateful and mindful that in our district that we are stewards of the money that we receive. And so the focus is always first and foremost on what is referred to as the instructional core, supporting the interaction between the teacher, the student, and the content. And we're able to do that. Currently in my district, we have been given a great gift because of members who are here today, Stand for Children, who partnered with us in our community in terms of the $71.5 million bond that helps us to build not just good schools, but state-of-the-art schools, and continue to strive for that excellence. Will we ever say, no, please don't give us more money? Absolutely not. But I think we need to have serious conversations in the state relative to the QEM. And again, that this isn't aspirational. This puts us in the middle of the pack. And that if there is a way, any way in which we can link arms around that concept, we would be right there with you, because it makes a difference. If we can extend the school year for our children, it's the right conversation to have. And so thank you for the question.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. I'm surprised at your comments just now, because most people have been hiding from the fact that we're terribly underfunded, especially from the state, which has a great responsibility for doing it. My question was, because of the underfunding, how can you take care of the homeless and disabled children as poverty is greatly increasing among children right now in Oregon?
In 4J, we're about 45% poverty in terms of designated by free reduced lunch rates. In 4J, of our over 16,000 kids, we have 45%, about one out of two that come to us from poverty. So we look at this, as my colleagues do as well, as a moral obligation to ensure that we provide a free and appropriate education to all kids. And that's what it takes, because we're morally accountable for every student that comes to us. And we do that as best we can with the resources we have. And I agree with you. Can we always use more? Absolutely. But it's the funding cycle we have, the money that we receive, and do the best we can to ensure that quality education can K-12, that we're meeting the needs of kids.
I don't know that we each need, this is Colt Gill, Bethel School District, and I don't know that we each need to comment on every question, but I just want to add to, I agree with everything Gus said, and some of the programs that we have in place across all these districts in all 16 in Lane County, in fact, are really a shift in our thinking about how we provide an education to our diversifying community. We, Oregon schools, and even in Lane County, we have become much more diverse over the last 15 years. My school district, for example, went from about 8% minority students 15 years ago to over 30% today. And so we're serving a very different group of people. We have 60% of our students in living in poverty. And so we have shifted from thinking about providing equal resources to every student, thinking that's the way to level the playing field, to an equity-based model where for some students we know they need a little bit more to get to the same place as a student of privilege. And so we're shifting our resources around so that those schools that need more are getting more, and those students that need more are getting more. And a couple of ways that we're doing this, we have homeless student liaisons that are funded through federal dollars in the three large districts, and then Lane ESD provides that for the smaller school districts. And they work directly with families who are in a homeless situation, living out of their car or living on the streets or couch surfing from home to home, and try to get them the things that they need to be successful in school. We have family resource centers in across the county that are, we work with the Early Learning Council and Lane County government to provide more services for families in that way. And then Jody talked about earlier a new program through the federal government called CEP, Community Eligibility Program. And many of us in our highest poverty schools are now able to offer free meals, breakfast, lunch, and oftentimes dinner, supper, for free for all students. So we're not asking them to give us their financial information, but just treating them all the same and saying that this meal's on us. So those are some of the ways that some of the things that we have in place for our more diverse community that we're serving today.
And then I'd just like to close this thought relative to a meeting that Gus and Colt and I had just this morning relative to how can we as districts across Lane County come together leverage our resources to fight the same problems, but do it in a collaborative manner, because we know our children move from one district to the next. And so can we think differently and more strategically about the resources that we do have in delivering services?
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. Our table was interested in Colt Gill's comments about the social studies curriculum being dated and doesn't respond to the changing society. Have the other school districts also looked at, followed this kind of thing? Is there a disconnect there? What have they responded? What is the outreach of that curriculum to the adults in the community?
So I'll start. So in Mapleton, we also lack in the curriculum that we need for our social studies, and a lot of that happens because of budget cuts. But I can also speak to this because my husband is a high school social studies teacher, and he's very passionate about it. And I will tell you that even a brand new curriculum coming and adopted is not as adequate as it should be to help meet the standards and help get our kids ready. It takes a lot of additional resources and creative ideas coming from teachers to pull in activities and events and organizations to help support social studies. And when I say social studies, I mean all of social studies, from the psychology to if they do a history on film class, to civics, to government, to economics, to cultural studies, world studies, U.S. history. It changes in a blink of an eye, as we all know. And so it's hard for the curriculums to keep up with that. And so it's up to, falls on our teachers to be able to pull and to make it relevant and important and get our kids hooked into it.
In Springfield, we are behind because of the Great Recession relative to curriculum adoption in general. And so this year, we'll be bringing together a task force to take a look at how we can use and leverage the new state standards, where there is a great deal of information known as open source that is out and has been vetted through the Basel Project and other national groups that allows us to access free of cost primary source documents. The challenge is then, do you have adequate technology within your schools to be able to access that? So that will be an ongoing conversation about how to leverage that. One of the things that my chief operations officer and I have also been talking about is, are there better ways in which we can finance curriculum adoptions? So rather than hoping that from biennia to biennia we will have enough that we can take out for adoption, are there other options for us in terms of financing that process? So that we can stay as current as possible. So that'll be work that we'll be bringing to our board. And I think in the digital age, there are some pieces there that we can leverage in terms of access. We are a Google Docs district, and so this gives students an opportunity to download as long as they have access to technology, which came out of our $71.5 million bond. So we are blessed in that regard. I think also, though, going forward, it gets back to what I said earlier relative to integrated content and to teaching to the whole child. So no curriculum that you would purchase off the shelf will ever be totally up to date. You are always, as a teacher, looking for new and innovative ways to make the curriculum come alive, and that will always be there. That is part of our charge. That's why community-based projects and interfacing with local governments and nonprofits and other opportunities for children to make civics come alive is so important to that process.
I just want to, this is Colt Gill again from Bethel School District, and I just want to touch back on that link to the community. And one of the things that we have going on, again, because of great community partnerships in Lane County, is we have a willingness on the part of some of our civic leaders and instructors at Lane Community College that are willing to come into the high schools and teach courses side by side with our instructors or even on their own. So a couple of examples that have happened in the three larger districts at least, and maybe in some of the smaller districts as well, is Greg Evans, who's one of our city councilors and an instructor at LCC, has come in and taught African American history at our high schools. And that's a course that not only do the students get a high school credit for, but they get community college credit for. Jim Garcia has done the same with Latino American history. And those courses happen during the school year for the students, but sometimes they can extend even into the summer through Lane Community College's Rites of Passage program, so students can experience or put to work what they've learned in those courses in more of a social activism and kind of engagement process in the summertime.
I'm Jane Elliott. My membership is through the Oregon Country Fair. I'm also a retired teacher from Oak Ridge, where many of us were heartbroken about the four-day week, where we felt that our budget was being balanced on the backs of the most poorly paid among us. It was the classified staff that got their pay cut so that we'd have a little more money. My question, my table allowed me to bring this very narrow question. I was fascinated about the news about the social justice course at Churchill and the street law course, if I remembered. Was that just at Churchill or all of 4J? Can you tell us more about those courses?
This is Gustavo Balderas again from 4J, and that also reminds folks I've been on the job 8 weeks. So so part of it is just trying to understand what we do, but we do have North Eugene High School, for example, has a law studies and a social justice course in New North Eugene High School. Churchill actually has environmental law, which I think is very interesting as well. But those are a lot of times are staff specific and school specific. You know, one of the things is you have these singleton classrooms. I call it these singletons out there, meaning these single courses that are they're very specific to the high school, and it's taught by someone who's passionate about what they do. So you know, we're very fortunate here in 4J to have outstanding administrators and teachers to allow that flexibility to meet the needs of the kids and to meet the needs of the students. But what I can do is come back to you and exactly maybe give you more information, maybe via an email regarding what exactly those what's being taught, the curriculum is being taught. I don't have that in front of me, so I apologize.
Bob Hart, City Club member. Actually, a question for each of you. Is it possible, given all the mandates that you're under, for a student to complete high school without ever having had either a social studies, my particular interest is the civics part, can a student get through your curriculum without ever having had such a course?
I'll start. So in Oregon, you're required to have 24 credits to graduate from high school. And in our system, I think probably in all of our systems, require 4 credits of social studies. And some of those can be elective credits in social studies where they could choose African American history or one of these law courses that they talk about at Churchill. For most of us, there are some standard courses as well that include U.S. history, government, economics, and different courses like that. So you really can't get through and earn a diploma without taking social studies at the high school level.
I'm Raisa Maddox, City Club member representing Capella Market. If funding were not your biggest struggle, what would the biggest challenge be in each of your school districts?
I think for 4J, again, during my tenure here, is meeting the needs of all students, making sure that we're able to meet the needs of all students because of a changing society. I think Colt mentioned earlier the demographic changes in Bethel. It's the same in 4J, where we were 5% Latino in 2000. We're now closer to 15% Latino Hispanic here in Eugene, and it's going to continue to be more diverse. And not only on top of that, the poverty level keeps increasing. So we keep on, it just keeps going up. And that's across every system that we work with. So that's top priority, and how to meet the needs of students that have such diverse needs and training and support staff that's needed, counselors, more homeless liaisons, for example, and also family outreach. We can't do it alone. We have kids for 6 hours of the day. Typically, our schools have kids 6 hours of the day. What happens to students the other 18 hours is point critical. to be able to work with communities, because it truly is a community support system, not just a school support system. So how do we work together with families to ensure that we're meeting the needs of students and be able to work with families on how to work with parenting skills, for example? I was talking to Colt earlier. A lot of times we have very, very young parents that are enrolling kindergartners, very, very young parents. So those parents need some supports from our from not only schools but from our community. So.
Colt Gill, Bethel School District, and I just want to say ditto to that because I think that's the primary challenge. I'll add in one that I think comes closely behind, and it's also related to just a changing society in the United States. And I say two things about that changing society. One is that this year's seniors that we have, when they came to us in kindergarten, there were not iPhones or iPads or Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat, any of these kinds of things that are very engaging for students. And so a real challenge is, what do we do to keep student engagement at a high level in high school and in all of our schools, for that matter? So we need to really work strongly on our instructional strategies, ways to make sure that our students feel like the curriculum is relevant to them and their lives, so that they are paying attention in school and getting what they need to come out and be a successful citizen. I think I'll leave it there.
So this is Jody O'Mara from Mapleton. Thank you. I hope this question comes to actually happen. But I think for rural school districts, and obviously I speak for Mapleton as well, it's a matter of giving our students the experience and opportunities to look outside of our community. We are not as culturally diverse as some of the bigger school districts. So giving our kids the knowledge and the understanding of the different cultures that are in the United States and are in Lane County, that's imperative, as well as giving them the ability to visualize themselves going to college, two-year, four-year trade school, and being ready when they graduate high school to make a decision and go out into the world and be successful and not have to come back and live with their parents, which is not a bad thing, but we want them to be able to go out and be successful and then make the choice to return.
But the only thing I could add to that, this is Sue Reiki Smith, Springfield, would be the fact that I would want us to be focused to making the preschool to 20 dream in Oregon alive and vibrant, and really being side by side with our parent community. They are their child's first teacher, and you know, deepening that relationship and coming alongside of them and providing the additional supports around the educational experience, not just engaging children in great content, but also engaging their parents and their caregivers in ways that they feel very much a part of the process, so that we can deliver that student into multiple pathways of their choosing, either career ready right out of the gate, or ready to take on a two-year technical degree, or AA degree, or a bachelor's degree. You know, I shared with KLCC earlier this week that I always ride the school bus the first day, and we were picking up elementary students and freshmen. And the elementary kinder got on the bus, and her pigtails were absolutely flying, and she's just standing there shaking. And I said, "Sweetheart," I said, "are you okay?" And she said, "I'm just so excited to be here. I can't stand it." And then right behind her got a freshman on the bus who said, "Do I have to go to school?" So, you know, you have this continuum that we experience. And there was a piece of me that felt sad for the freshmen that they didn't still have that excitement. Yet, having raised three of my own, I know that that just comes with the territory. And they do get excited eventually again. But that's our charge, is to really keep our students and our parents and our community engaged in the great work that we're given to do.
Thank you all for being here today. I really appreciate taking time out of what's an incredibly busy schedule to be here. My name's Sandra Bishop, City Club member, and this is a question for Jay and Bethel, really. What is the appropriate role for city council and mayor to play in education? You've got some very activist folks that get on the council and want to do something about education. What's the appropriate role there for those people?
So strong collaborations. I'm a big believer that you can't collaborate enough on projects. And I know that the city council has a role, as a mayor does, but so does the city of Eugene. And we have strong partnerships with all, and continue to work together on a common cause, common cause, we always go back to kids. We always go back, stay focused on why we're here. We're focused here. We're here. I have a job because there's kids in Eugene. And just keep that be our focus. And how do we work together on collaborations around that focus? And I think that's the power of a great community, is keeping the eye on the prize. And leave the adult actions out sometimes, and make sure that we just focus on students and student achievement and doing the best we can to educate kids each and every day.
Yeah, this is Colt from Bethel. I don't know that I can add much to that either. I think the partnerships are just crucial, and frankly, they're very strong. We've been lucky enough to have our past two mayors, who many of us can't remember when there was a mayor before Kitty or Jim, because they've been mayors so long. They have been fantastic champions of education. Kitty Piercy was a teacher. Jim Torrey spent many, many days reading to students in all of our elementary schools. So they are very supportive of what happens. And in a number of ways, that affects everything that goes on in the city government. So when we are doing construction, both districts have these bond measures, and we're building new schools or replacement schools. The city has worked closely with us to try to make those as energy efficient as possible, using their green buildings team to work with us and provide support to help cut through some of that red tape around permitting and things like that, to help save money so we can put it into the classroom instead of into a permit. With Parks and Recreation, that's a crucial partnership for what happens, like Gus said, after that 6 hours that we have the students. If we can share our land and create spaces for students and families to be after school's out and during the weekends, we're doing a lot of that. We've partnered together on creating turf fields, recreation programs that exist within our schools after the school day and then carry on into the weekends. A lot of those kinds of programs are where we come together, and I think we both experienced a lot of support from our city councilors and city government all the way through.
Hi, Marlene Nesry, City Club member. I'm interested in the interaction between service learning programs and civics and social studies. Are they part of the same umbrella of pedagogy and curriculum planning? Are they funded differently? Are they taught differently? How does that work?
This is Sue in Springfield. In Springfield, they are integrated into the content. And so the examples that I provided with you earlier in our program, those are an extension of, that would be the project-based learning that students do. So again, it's around being instructed relative to the knowledge and skills, and then it's around taking those projects and connecting students relative to where do I get to practice civics behaviors, you know, how do I leverage my understanding of the legislative process in terms of, you know, advocating for a particular nonprofit or a particular policy or a particular legislative bill.
I Bob Hart again, City Club member. I also want to thank you for coming today and sharing your expertise. Kind of an open-ended question in that we've been asking you about what you're doing with our children. What would you have us do as parents to help them prepare to come to you?
Great question.
Okay, we're looking at who's going to start? Colt Gill, Bethel School District. I love that question. And I think part of that question, well, it looks like you're asking what responsibility do we want you to take? I still pull that back a lot onto us. Mm-hmm. With our changing community, we need to be listening more and make sure that everyone in our community knows that they can come to their district and be heard and tell us what they think their schools need to look like, because they are our community's schools. So with that, to me, it's an invitation. So, you know, please come talk to us. We have a lot of open events where we talk about exciting things and sometimes very controversial things like state assessments. But we want everyone there, because there are rules that we have to follow, but there are also ways that we can make those things be as beneficial to our own community and our students as possible. So I would say, first, it's an open door. Second, I want to reiterate what Sue said. Our parents are our students' first and most important teacher throughout their lives. And so as much as we can partner together and share information back and forth between the teachers at the school and the parents, and make sure that we're on the same page and reinforcing each other in everything we're trying to do to provide for that student, then that provides a better education and a student who comes out as a citizen who's willing to get engaged like folks at the City Club of Eugene.
This is Jody O'Mara, Mapleton. I would also say each and every one of you have a gift. Each and every one of you have something that you are good at and that you can give to the schools, whether it's reading a book through the SMART program to kids once a week or once a month, or whether it's volunteering to even just in an after-school program to teach knitting. That was big last year at my school. You each have something to give. And just knowing that you're out there and letting the schools in your area know, hey, I can offer this opportunity for kids if you'd like to have me come. Just knowing that you're out there and you're willing to come in, that is huge to be able to volunteer. Because reading what Colt said, you guys, all of you, whether you have children or not, you being out there in the community, the way you interact with them, that's their experience. And so being able to bring that into the schools in a positive manner is really important.
And for Eugene, 4J, we are going to be engaging in a community engagement plan. George Russell, superintendent here for years, had a Schools for the Future back in 1999, and looking to try and replicate a model in terms of, that's been stated before, what does a community expect of our school district? What does a community want our school district to look like and shoot for that aspiration? And that's something that we're going to be engaging with here in Eugene to develop our own Eugene education model. So,
and Sue Ricky Smith, Springfield. In closing, what I would share with you on that one is I'm thinking about also how can we strategically leverage the opportunities that our state legislature gives us. And I'm now thinking about the great gift, and it really is an important moment in our history around full-day kindergarten. And so while, yes, the vision is that we will, in hopes of having more students proficient at reading and mathematics by third grade, when you look at the research, it's sketchy relative to whether it fades or not. And you know, it behooves us, not just as educators, but as a community as a whole, to continue to build one year to the next. So as educators, we need to have a very tight way of assessing and moving our children from kinder to that third grade benchmark, but at the same time thinking about the fact that I'm blessed with a community that is a legacy district. How can I engage, and these are going to be conversations I'll be having with our team Springfield partners, which is Willamette Lane, Sub, and the city, as well as Springfield Chamber of Commerce. How can you help us do a community-wide literacy project that, you know, when a child walks into a restaurant or into a business, you know, there's of people who are engaging them in conversation, and what did you learn today, and show me what you've learned, so that there's a real a reality for that child that what they're learning is important in terms of how they are growing up within the community. And I look forward to doing that work this year.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you Gustavo Balderas, Colt Gill, Jody O'Mara, and Susan Ricky Smith for bringing clarity and vision to the City Club program, Civic Education in Oregon, Local Superintendents, Lane County Projects. And thanks again to our sponsors, Luvis and Cobb, SantaPac, and PacInfo. We meet again on September 18th at the Downtown Athletic Club for South Willamette Special Area Zone with guest speakers Eben Fodor, South Willamette Neighbors, and Bill Randall, Chair of the Eugene Planning Commission. Lunches for this program can be ordered on the City Club's website or by contacting this office. Let's give a round of applause for this wonderful program and the speakers.